What you are listening to is real. The participants are not actors. They are real people with a case pending in podcast court. Hello, I'm producer Peter, and welcome back to Cage Match, a roundabout way of meeting Nicolas Cage, podcast court. Today we will hear arguments for a deadbeat dad with a true love of personal freedom and a cop with no authority who wants to know, how'd it get burned?
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
I mean, I'm surprised after 2 years of this, more than 2 years, that outside of the time your house got broken into, we've never lost an episode due to just poor recording like practices.
Yeah, that's true, which is kind of amazing. I mean, we lost that one. We've never missed a release, too, yeah. Which is also kind of wild because we absolutely should have.
Some good stats.
Yeah. I mean, Daryl, you've been doing this for fucking forever. Have you, how are your stats?
All right. They're not too bad. I think the only time we've had a bit of a blunder is me and Petros did a sort of a Patreon first thoughts episode on Beetlejuice. And then the second we finished recording, Petros immediately accidentally deleted his half of the recording. So we had to do it again.
I bet the jokes were better the second time.
I hope so.
Did you record the whole thing again, or did you just play back your end and let him react?
Yeah, live reactions.
Yeah. Like, by all accounts, I should have made him grovel, but we recorded the whole thing again.
Oh, that's mighty nice of you.
But you'd never know. We found it to be perfectly fine.
Yeah, that was my takeaway.
Yeah, I've heard either like it's okay or real love. So I don't know. Yeah.
Hey, okay and up is still pretty decent.
Yeah, fair enough.
I've never gotten that kind of review on myself.
The self-love starts from within.
So are we talking like one knuckle, two knuckles? How far within?
Whatever feels comfortable at the start, then you got to work from there, you know?
Ooh, don't press it. Okay, right, I feel you. Right. That's nice.
Well, welcome back, Daryl. It feels like it's been everyone. Too long.
And somehow feels like it's been no time at all.
Yeah, exactly. You missed spider season, though.
No, it's just happening right now.
Well,
there's a big boy like right at the bottom of my stairs.
Yeah, I've seen some good ones.
I haven't gotten them in my face.
No, they've been staying out of the walkway this year so far.
Cowards.
Yeah.
Or wait, they're planning.
Sean, with you moving and this being your last spider season here, I'm absolutely gonna bring spiders into your house.
You're not allowed in my house anymore.
Spider boxes.
Definitely bringing spiders in.
Don't. Why would you do that? we're friends.
For now.
We still have to finish this podcast.
Yeah, but not like next to each other.
Don't bring spiders into my house.
You're not my dad.
The friends are the spiders we made along the way.
No, right? They're not.
Okay, I won't bring spiders into your house. I'll put some in your car and you can take them to Portland. Then Portland can have spider season.
Yay.
Portland does have spider season as well.
I mean, they're not that dissimilar from here.
Yeah, their spiders suck, though.
They do?
They've got like the bad spiders.
Yeah.
We've got like benign big house spiders.
Helpful spiders.
Yeah. Bug eaters. Okay. And they've got like people biters.
I was in Portland once for Rose City Comic Con and a spider touched my peen.
Okay, I need to hear about that.
I was very exhausted, flew from Virginia to Portland. My bag got lost, which had all my stuff for the con in it. And I was staying at a friend's house, which wasn't in like the most savory part of town. So I'm waiting for my bag to show up. And the guy's like, yeah, I'm just doing rounds. I'll be, you know, getting there in a couple hours. I'm like, cool.
So naturally you get your hog out.
So, yeah, were you like bored and trying to clear cobwebs or something? You're like, I'll just knock them down.
I'm just trying to stay up waiting for the fucking guy to show up with my bag. 3 hours go by.
You gotta keep it up while you wait.
3 hours go by. I call him. I'm like, where the fuck are you? And he's like, oh, I just have one more delivery in Portland, but it's in Southeast and I got to head 2 hours north first. And I'm like, yeah, who do you think that last delivery is, motherfucker? So I can't sleep till my bag gets there. Otherwise, I can't do the convention. So I'm at about 26 hours of not sleeping. I go into the bathroom and I'm get my dick out to pee. And I'm just standing there like woozy. And I like open my groggy ass eyes and there's a spider just dangling in front of my face. So I like instinctively like swipe. And then I feel something bounce off my dick.
Oh, that. Okay. I wanted more.
Spider touched my peen.
I want a scramble spider.
Yeah. I wanted a spider to like just kind of reach out like Arcadian style and just like brush the head.
Use its tetapelts.
Yeah.
8 arms reach out from the darkness and fucking crank you.
That actually probably wouldn't be too bad. So much stimulation.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
You guys been reading my dream journals again?
So welcome back to Cage Match.
And apparently scanning them and emailing them to Daryl. I see why you send them to Daryl. The spider had the face of Willem Dafoe.
We've got a whole separate group chat with all of our guests on it. We just
don't invite me.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Rip into your weird sex shit.
I mean, you guys, there is the Cage Match like fan chat that I do not engage with whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good shit in there.
Because they're beneath me.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely leaving that in.
I love you, John and Freeman.
Yeah, the two people in a group chat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems the ones who actually engage.
Is there anyone else in that chat?
Cameron's in there.
Hi, Cameron. I appreciate you too. Welcome back to Cage Match, Colin, Roundabout Way, meeting Nicolas Cage. I'm your host, Sean, here with
Nick,
your
co-host.
Oh,
perfect.
Fine.
Nick.
And our producer,
Peter. Hello.
And again, our special guest, Daryl from Cage something.
Yeah, 3 times. I wouldn't expect you to remember it on the 3rd time. Why would you? Hello, I'm back. I'm from Cage Rage, a Nicolas Cage podcast. And I'm also from Getting Defoe You, a dedicated Defoe podcast covering the works of Nicolas Cage and Willem Dafoe, respectively. There may or may not be hog chat. More in one than the other. So we're all in good company in Hogshot today.
Daryl, I hope you don't mind, but I've tagged you as part of our episodes on IMDb, which I still think is hilarious that we can be on IMDb.
I did wonder why it was showing up on IMDb, and now this all makes sense.
We can just add people to IMDb.
I mean, IMDb is a lot like Wikipedia, where kind of anything goes, and then they audit it eventually.
Oh, sick.
It's Wild Wild West. You guys want to be in some movies?
I'm going to start some.
I want to be in Wild Wild West.
Flat Earth or IMDb shit.
Good. Yeah, I like that.
Lots of trivia about movies. Did you know the world is flat?
The core. There is no core.
Look at the film. Who was recording it?
Oh, God. When are they going to start making like, when are the flat earthers going to start like making like
flat earth films?
Kind of like, you know, Left Behind, but like for flat earth.
Oh, yeah, like we're going to go to the edge, to the ice wall.
Yeah.
What's the opposite of Left Behind? Right Here.
Yeah, right.
Just nothing of consequence happens. You just can't, there's just no slopes and it's never addressed. No inclines, no slopes, flat filmmaking.
Easy walking.
I mean, that would make biking a lot easier.
And boringer. Can you imagine just biking all the time and always having to pedal, never getting to just roll down a hill?
Yeah, that sounds no fun at all.
Put your arms up like it's a roller coaster. Can't do that anymore.
No.
Not on flat ground.
Flat's boring.
Yeah. Can you imagine celebrating riding on flat ground? Like, yay, I'm having so much fun.
Fuck like that. I went fast for a bit and now I'm just going to raise my arms.
I'm not into it.
No, that's boring.
Yeah, you could be the renegade who invented the ramp and then you would try to the Hague.
So, Daryl, did you feel more connected to us watching The Wicker Man because it takes place in our area?
In the Puget Sound?
Is that correct? You are basically Wicker Man adjacent.
We are. We're close to the island.
We're right next to that CG island from Myst.
Yes, exactly. I mean, of course, it was recorded in Vancouver, Canada, but, you know.
Which is north of here.
Yeah, it's also Seattle adjacent.
Yeah. So on this podcast, we take 64 Nicolas Cage films, bracket them up, Final Four style, and we'll eventually whittle them down to what is the cagiest film of all, as decided by Nick and me. I'm just giving Peter more work to edit this so it makes sense.
I don't care.
You've really let this podcast go downhill.
The edits get looser and looser.
All the way.
Oh, yeah, we can't talk about hills anymore.
I'm not going to do this with my arms because I'm not having fun.
Listen, if you want to introduce what the podcast is halfway through, then that's your prerogative. Don't anyone tell you how to run your own podcast.
Thank you, Daryl. You understand.
I get it. There's no rules. No rules on flat ground, baby.
You just see from ever. If it weren't for trees, we could probably see Daryl.
Get a big telescope. Get the right angle. Let's get rid of all the inclines, the declines, the slopes, the mounds. I could do with less mounds. I have no time for a mound.
And Italy. Fuck that.
Yeah, one of us could be a rapper called Flatman Scoop. I'm just saying there's great potential for flat merchandise.
Oh, we could have our own signature set of flatware.
Exactly. Now you're starting to get it.
I love it. I'm in. I love marketing.
Untapped potential. All drinks would have to be flat, tires flat. Very, very literal.
Uncarbonated beer across the board.
Fantastic.
The Brits really went out on that one. They get their way.
We went to war over this. And we won.
You can keep your flat country. Country as flat as my goddamn ass. You can keep it.
So the Wicker Man.
So Wicker Man. That's what we're here to talk about. Daryl, you've seen The Wicker Man before. How many times have you seen this movie, do you think?
I feel like 4 or 5. I feel like I see it the way most of us see it, and that's through Nicolas Cage compilation clips. Mm-hmm. That's the only way to see it. So obviously we'll get into it. It sets up like it's going to be this big, crazy thing, and for like 80% of it, it's really not. It's just actually quite boring. Well, an interesting story about The Wicker Man for me is when I was at university. Is it university in America? Do you call it college? You have like 5 stages of everything.
We call it a waste of time.
Yeah, right.
Hey,
for future Biden's debt.
America. Future debt. I went to art college, so I'm doing great.
Extra future debt, yeah.
Actually, me doing a Nicolas Cage podcast makes a lot more sense right now.
Yes, it does. But anyway, yes, university.
All flat roads lead here, you know. So there was, you know, like a long story short, like a friend of mine had seen The Wicker Man. We'd all sort of seen The Wicker Man. And it was known that I was the Nick Cage guy in like our friend group. And then something happened to me and my friend had like a falling out. He was the year above me, so he was meant to do his final year stuff, dissertations, all this kind of business. But as an apology gesture, he went on his MacBook, hashtag not an ad. He took the Wicker Man film and somehow edited it down so it was only Nicolas Cage's scenes, gave that to me as a DVD, and I said, you can never hurt me again. This is the greatest gift I've ever received.
And then he punched you like Sister Beach?
And then he pushed me into a wall of picture frames. My back got all cut up, and then he ran off in a bear costume. But if you think The Wicker Man of its own accord, all 100 minutes, is pretty wild, you haven't seen the Nicolas Cage only cut. It makes less and more sense. I don't know. I'd have to ask if he still has it because various house moves later, I've unfortunately lost the disc, which I'm still absolutely devastated about over the course of the last 10 or so years. But the memory remains is the main thing. And I remember just going from this like, oh, that. It is the embodiment of a fever dream. And I'd really recommend someone makes a Nick Cage only cut of all of his films.
Peter?
This might be my magnum opus. We'll see. I was put on this earth for some good.
Now's your time, coward. Yeah. Let's do this.
Seize life by those big flat balls.
Yeah, no one's talking about girth anymore. It's all about that flat hog, baby.
Flat and wide.
It's all about that 16-pixel flat fucking Gallagher dick. I don't know, whatever. Do you want. But to answer your question, yes, I have seen The Wicker Man. I think I watched it earlier. It was also my partner's first time watching it as well, so she had some thoughts. It was interesting. All of them fantastic. The first, obviously, because she does some like design work here and there. The opening credits, to see fucking Papyrus in the credits. Oh, she was
on point.
She was like, this is the enemy of the designer. And she, I think on principle, didn't watch like the first 10 minutes, which I get it. I respect it. We all have our lines in the sand.
To be fair, the first 10 minutes of this movie do not matter.
No, they're pretty inconsequential.
Okay, one thing I do want to talk about in the first like 10, 20 minutes. So I think we hit on this in the first time we talked about this movie. His cop friend, not Pete, but the lady cop.
Yeah.
is she on the island at the end? There's like this big reveal where one lady takes off a mask and it's like a tall blonde lady. And I'm like, is that the same fucking person?
No, it was either Sister Beach or Lily Sobieski.
It was neither
of them. I just watched it this morning.
It was neither of them.
It is.
No, I'm telling you, it's a different clip because after that clip is when it's Sister Beach and Lily Sobieski.
I'm going to go turn this movie on right now. We're going to walk Daryl over to the screen. We're all going to judge.
We're all going to watch this. No, I just keep looking at it. I'm like, I think that's supposed to be her. And it's supposed to be this big reveal of like, everyone's been in on it. But like, they don't spend any time on it. And it isn't like she's a really remarkable looking person.
I mean, they do say the letter did get there without a stamp. And she did deliver the mail.
She did. And she seems like weirdly obsessed with him.
For all of those 2 minutes we see them together?
Yes.
And she was plain and blonde.
She was plain and blonde.
That's true. I wanted the twin thing to still be more.
Back to twincest again, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Did that make it into the final cut?
Oh, yeah.
Nice. You know about twincest, right, Daryl?
Yeah, you guys got the internet, right? We're all looking at the same shit, right?
Yeah, we're all on the same VPN here, right? We're all sharing the same internet history. Yeah, I don't believe in incognito because I'm very proud of everything I've ever searched. You know, you've got to stand by what you search. Some flat twincest? Yes, please.
Flat twincest.
The second flat tower has been struck. You're going to keep that in, I dare you.
Nick doesn't believe in it, so we can keep it in.
I mean, just like a Paper Mario 9/11 image just hit me in the head. I was like, oh, it's beautiful. I mean, it's not beautiful. It's beautiful.
Paper Mario is a great game. Paper Mario is a beautiful game.
It is a beautiful game. You're right.
The 9/11 ending was just wild.
Kind of out of left field, but
even when flat 9/11 happens, it's still a beautiful world.
That's what happens when you like Koopas on airplanes.
Yeah.
I said it. I'm racist against turtles.
I think to your point, though, is like if that lady was the same person, I don't know, because he does make a comment later of that. Is it like Sister Rose, the teacher, is like, did I speak to you earlier? And she's like, no, we've never met before. He's like, oh, are you sure? So he does see people who may or may not be the same person.
Well, that scene is right after he leaves the schoolhouse, I think. Because that's where I want the twin thing to be like more relevant.
Well, and also, I mean, because I'm sure they were like, it's too tricky to film two people who are the same person at the same time in a scene. So like they never tried with her. But like Sister Rose and Sister Thorne literally are never on screen together.
Which ones are they? Are they
the teacher and then like the bitchy lady that he runs into at some point.
Well, I feel like Lily Sobieski, when he meets her in the tavern drink hall, then goes right outside and she's chopping wood. Like that's always been a weird cut to me as well. There's a lot of fucking red herrings in this movie that go nowhere.
So I think I was trying to remember, Sean, did we watch this together the last time?
Yes.
Okay. So last time we watched it, I like had a really fun time with it for some reason. And then I watched it.
It was my winning personality.
Yeah.
You cunt.
Well, yeah, thanks. That helps. That helps a lot. And then this time when I was watching, I was like, God, it's so boring for like a huge portion of this movie. There's like little funny, goofy bits like the. Is that a shark in the bag? You know, like that kind of dumb shit. You know, it helps to look at the picture. All that kind of stuff is really like these little snapshots of funny shit. But then the rest of it is like a very dull procedural until all of a sudden he's just running around the island like like a man who is definitely like 45, you know?
Yeah, I think two things would have really improved the movie. And it's like if there were more scenes of him riding the bicycle, like literally if he was
agreed
every time he went from one location to another,
he had to get the
you
bike.
Mandated the bicycle come out and he rides the bike.
I love that dorky ass bike.
Yeah. And then two, put like some Benny Hill music under the bicycle scenes, like, or some like just goofy bee jazz.
I love when he's done talking to Summer's Isle the first time and she's like, your transport. And it's just that one dude who like rolls the bike up.
I feel like this movie needed everyone who wasn't Nicolas Cage to try acting 20% harder or 20% less. There's just this.
Have you ever tried to be 20% harder?
There's just this like milieu of like they don't care. But they care enough for a paycheck and I need them to care a lot less or a lot more.
Yeah, I think Nicolas Cage is the only person giving this film the acting it deserves. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the blame on this is that like Neil LaBute, however you say his last name, obviously as a man and as a director and a writer, does have the charisma of, oh, wet vegetables. He's got just nothing about him. There's no sauce. Obviously, they've stripped away the whole, I guess, like religious kind of thing of the original one. Made it like what they've really done is that they've said, Nicolas Cage, you come to an island of women and you're about to disrupt an entire community's thing by just being really rude, aggressive. And I don't know exactly how American laws work in the sense of crossing state lines. As far as I'm aware, he's not an inspector or a detective. He's just a guy on a motorbike on a highway who got a commendation for letting a girl explode. I don't know how that works. And then he took it upon himself to go to an island, insult everyone, assault everyone. And really, even though, yes, he's been kind of bamboozled to go into the island, he is really the villain of the piece and gets what he deserves.
It really is the most effectively Americanized version of a movie ever. Like, he just comes in, he's ignorant of the situation, he imposes himself on everybody, he assaults somebody, there's a gun involved, and women were harmed, generally.
Yep.
I'm gonna fucking go home and eat some ribs. I like this so much.
Ruins a way of life. Yeah, well, like, when he's saying, like, look, there's a missing girl on this island. I think you said it, Pete. It's like, it usually helps if you look at the photograph. I'm like, right off the bat, okay, you're not supposed to be here. You've crossed state lines. You have no authority.
No authority.
You have no power. There's nothing to suggest that he's, like, got any kind of rank in the police force that he's with. Like,
he's a highway patrol. Cop. Yeah.
He's just highway patrol.
Yeah, he's got speeding tickets. That's it.
Chips.
Yeah.
I do like when he's that little montage of him, like, when he's giving people tickets. He goes to the one guy's like, you know, I pulled you over. And the guy's just like, yeah.
Yeah. I kind of liked at the start where he's pulled over with that mother and the daughter. She keeps throwing the doll out. And then that truck plows into him from nowhere. Funny every single time.
Absolutely. And
one thing I always enjoy is that, like, for the first time watching this, you never know when that truck's going to strike that little girl again. It's not over for her.
Every time he's on, when he wakes up from the nightmare on the dock, I always just want a truck to just run him over real quick. And then he wakes up again.
Yeah, the double dream sequence.
My favorite bit is that he's just sat on the dock and he's just had a daymare. He just drifted off. He's like, oh. It's like you're looking for a missing girl and you just stopped to have
for a nap.
You've just stopped for a horrifying thing. A nightmare in the day. You've had a daymare. You keep getting hit by the truck. When he was trying to get the girl out of that truck as well, he's smashing that rear like windscreen with his helmet. And he tries to prise it apart. He's like, take my hand. And she's just staring at him. So when she explodes, deserved. But at the same time,
bad kid.
He was just gonna pull a kid through shards of broken glass.
It's safety glass. It's fine.
That stuff don't cut.
No, I don't know. It's children's skin, though. The weakest of skins.
I mean, would you rather be mildly cut up or exploded?
The kid obviously chose exploded.
Yeah.
So
I wish she just like gave him like double fingers and like double right birds. When it explodes, like, fuck you.
So I didn't realize it. But I wound up watching the unedited version. Like,
oh, yeah. Okay.
The extreme version. Which is the exact same movie.
But you see the hobbling, don't you?
You see the hobbling.
Yeah.
And then the bee scene is actually in there, which looks terrible because CGI bees of that era.
Yeah.
The only other difference is they cut the ending of the girls hitting on
James Franco.
And he was Dipper in Gravity Falls.
Yes, he was.
Mm. He's also the son of John Ritter. Jason Ritter.
Jason Ritter.
We got there.
Yeah, nice. Good work. Way to use your brain.
But I thought watching that when they do the whole beast thing and he goes into like anaphylactic shock or whatever shock it is. Anaphylactic?
Yeah, that sounds right.
But he like passes out. I'm like, this is actually kind of nicer that they like knock him out before like they burn him alive. And then the doctor like shoots him up with
adrenaline?
an EpiPen.
His bee epi.
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought adrenaline.
But like an EpiPen. And she's like, we need to keep you alive for the next part. And I'm like, oh, this is meaner now.
Man. I like how they load him into the chest cavity by like dragging him up from between the legs.
Hobbled legs.
So he hangs down like a little Nicolas Cage wiener for a minute, and then they load him in. It looked like the Wicker Man had a huge dong.
Just the best dong.
This is all I watch for.
Well, that could be a dong.
Yeah, it's a shame that no one who was like participating in the crowd was like, who what Wicked they man right now, just like high-fiving each other whilst Cage is getting like just dragged by his lapels. They should have played like Nelly Furtado's I'm Like a Bird as he was getting dragged up, and I think that would have...
We need to make the ultimate cut of this film.
I mean, it's been redone once. Let's do it again.
Yeah.
Now with more bicycle.
More bicycle, flat, 100%.
Be the people that you want to be, that you would like to inspire. You know, the 2007 YouTube poop editors out there. I remember. I remember YouTube poop. I never forgot.
I think one of the things about this movie is it seems like it tries really hard to be full of mystery, but literally none of the mysteries that they put out there ever pay out. Like, there's no explanation of anything. You see the weird, like, bee-stung dude in Summer's Isle's house. You see that one lady getting, you know, like, bees crawling all over her in a bee beard. It's like, what is this for?
Four
nothing? Play. Nothing. It's for nothing. Why are there so many twins? I don't know. Doesn't matter. Don't ask questions. What's in the fucking bag? Is it a shark? It's like, you just, nothing ever pays out. Like, there's no explanation of anything. You know, why does fucking Dr. Moss have like all these weird jars of deformed babies?
Those are the boys.
Are they?
Well, probably.
They had little boy parts, I'm assuming. Could have been bee stings.
It's just a strange movie.
It is.
There are so many things that I'm like, oh, okay, you know, this could be Shutter Island or something where it actually really does pay out. And it's like, nope, you just don't find out.
No.
John would turn to me every once in a while and be like, eh? And I'd be like, mm-mm.
Yeah, with no real positive resolution for Cage's character, it doesn't feel like anything mattered. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, okay, it's still going to be, you know, Midsummer or whatever.
It is kind of just shitty Midsummer.
Like, the only thing that makes this movie palatable is just Nick Cage hamming it up for the whole film.
Him going into the classroom and like erasing all this stuff in that one little section, then just writing, you know, Rowan, whatever on the board.
Rowan Woodward.
And then all the kids are like, we don't know her at all.
Yeah.
We're just running around ripping masks off kids.
The single line
through on her like ledger for her name. It's like, good way to bury it.
Yeah. But the like fucking crow in the desk still gets me. It's like, oh. Yeah.
And then the girls get him again later with the girl pretending to be dead in the closet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You've never had a dead desk crow and it shows. You haven't lived.
It's better than a spider bouncing off your dick.
Well, yeah, a spider crow, some horrible flat spider crow thing. But my partner's a teacher, and when he went into that school and started rubbing all like prose off the board, she was like, you just don't go into someone's classroom mid-lesson and just wipe it all down just to scream at the children. I mean, you know, to be fair, they're all gaslighting him. It's a room full of gaslighters. Totally. And he had more restraint than me. And I think I outright said this to my partners. I'm like, I would have at least punched the twins because they were freaking me out.
Oh, the old ones?
Both. All of them.
All young, old.
No, yeah, you don't, all the you twins. Don't punch. Just,
boom.
Yeah, see, the best part about twins, you just get to...
Oh, yeah, head bonk.
Coconut at them.
You assume that they're two separate like parts of the same whole, so you're trying to put them back together.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the twin magic thing, you punch one, the other one feels it. So, you know, it's twice the payoff.
Have you ever watched the movie? Okay, this is related. Have you ever watched the movie Sorceress? Old Sword and Sorcery? Like,
no, I don't think I have.
Lots of boobs. So there's two characters. They're twins, see? And they feel all the same things. One of them, like, they just discover that they're girls. They always assumed they were boys because their dad told them and never told them the difference.
Mm-hmm.
That's its own thing. But like when one of them realizes that they're a girl, they finally get laid, and the other one is just like at camp, and the dwarf is just standing there and she's just getting off on the ground, and the dwarf watches, and it's just really weird and creepy. Sorry, I've been watching a lot of sword and sorcery movies lately. And I think Krull is next. Yeah.
Gotta get your twincest fix.
Yeah.
You freak.
So
this is going exactly how I expected a Daryl episode would go.
I won't let you have a standard conversation. It's not in the contract to do
that. That's perfect. Yeah, your writer is, it's going to go fucking crazy.
We're going to make it weird. There's going to be flat earth theories. There's going to be flat 9/11. There's going to be twincest. It might be flat. That's not for me to say. I'm not a twin myself. You know, I don't dictate where the flat conversation goes all of the time. But I can tell you one thing. It's not going off an edge because they don't exist.
That's right.
Wait a minute.
You're a plant.
No edges exist.
I disappear. I get Thanos from existence. It's too risky.
Black hole.
We go back, listen to our old episodes. It's just us talking to no one.
To no one, yeah, exactly. And our guest, Daryl.
Can you like edit together like a package where it's you've actually been listening back to all my episodes and I get hit by a truck in every single yeah, just put like Black Hole Sun over it, like dun, dun, dun. It's a whole thing, seasons worth of payoff.
So good. I can't wait to go back and have Peter re-edit all of our previous content.
Absolutely, it's worth it for one joke.
That's for the fan group. That's for the group chat, isn't it?
Oh yeah, exactly. They'll really appreciate it.
Get the long term listeners.
Yeah, want. John and Freeman.
Yep. And maybe Cameron.
Maybe Cameron. Oh, man. Is Cameron the one I met outside the bird that one time, apparently?
Yes. Yeah, you got us a supporter. Good work.
So, okay. I know I love the bicycle scenes the most out of this movie.
Yes.
What are like your most non-conventional favorite parts of the film?
I still love when he just sucker punches Sister Beach. Like, that's just the best part of this film.
The slow walk down the stairs, the whole build. It was like a fighter coming down to the ring. He knew exactly what he was going to do.
Yeah.
I do like that at the end when she does take the thing off, she does have like a big red spot on her face too. I was like, good continuity. Someone was paying attention.
Someone on that side was paying attention.
Yeah.
I kept getting distracted at the last scene when like the reveal happens. There's this one woman and she's a little out of focus because she's in the background who looks like she's in blackface.
Oof.
But when you get a close up on her later, when they're like, you know,
B-face.
It's B-face.
Yeah.
But it's like really dark colors. So like you don't see the stripes from far away. I'm like, that was a bold decision.
Yeah, not a good look.
Are you doing B-face? Buzz buzz.
I think Summer's Isle's house is probably my favorite.
Yeah.
Like, very weird. And then they're like walking through the gardens and he's swatting bees off of it. It's like, dude, get the fuck out of there.
Yeah. Yeah. He's magnetized to danger, walking through bees, running into bees, cycling.
He's real cocky.
Of all the things that don't make sense about this film, them killing the pilot who like brings them all their supplies still always bothers me.
Why'd they give him wicker hands? Like, that's a lot of work.
To fuck with Nick Cage. That, again, that's the one part of this film that, I mean, there's a lot of parts of the film that don't work, but like that one's the one that's just like, just pointless. To fuck with him, they completely fuck up their entire like ability to get shit.
Well, he did betray their trust.
He did.
Oh, but that was the whole point.
But that was the
for
point.
Him to get out there. Hmm. He's a man. Men are expendable in this society, so it's fine.
Yeah, they're all drones. They can't say anything. All they do is harvest and drink the beer. That's all they do.
How do you think they choose which boys to keep alive?
Strongest stock. I believe that's what they establish.
So, like, just from Sister Beach, then?
Yeah.
Yeah. Whoever can fight Sister Beach may go on to the plantation of honey and secure the harvest. Yeah,
that's when you can get stung by a bunch of bees and just be in bed.
Whomst of you has the strongest boy with the flyest hog? He will lead us into the next harvest.
Oh, this movie's so dumb.
I love it. I still love it.
I do too.
I'm so glad it made it to the slick stain.
As it should.
Yeah, I mean, it really does have a place. So actually, on that note, Daryl, like, why do you think this belongs in the echelon of like top weird Cage?
I think this is kind of a film that, I guess if you look at it in terms of the cagiest performances, came along at just the right time. It was like, what, 2006, so YouTube is still very young. It is still a boy yet to be stung. And this is like the time where I think every other channel is some film review channel. Everyone's being angry for the sake of being angry because no one's reviewing nice stuff in 2006. Everyone's being a piece of shit. So it comes along around a similar time with the Nicolas Cage Losing His Shit compilations. And it's just kind of like gestating part, and it just builds. And it has this whole lore about it. It's like, oh, this is one of the worst Nicolas Cage films, or the best ones, depending on how you view Nicolas Cage. It's one of the cagest of the Cage films. And for like out of context scenes, and you know, we've probably all seen an out of context meme from this film of him in a bear costume punching a woman blowing a horn.
Who amongst us hasn't?
Who amongst us has not fantasized of that moment? But this is just, I think, where, I don't know if there's a better word for this, something, the downfall, I'm going to use that in air quotes, of Nicolas Cage may have started here. Because what was 2000? Is this the same year he did the Twin Towers movie, which is, speaking of Flight 911?
It was right around the same time.
He was doing this. I think, did he do The Ant Bully this year as well? An absolutely insane year for Nicolas Cage output. You start your year as an ant wizard. You end your year burning in the torso of a wicker man. So I think a lot of people will say, like, oh, you look at a film like this and this is why Nicolas Cage is insane. But this is what we've been talking about, though, because, like, most of this film, it's a little rough around the edges. It's a little directionless. It's very absurd. And even though they claim to have used 80% of the exact same dialogue as the original film, and then they claimed, when everyone was like, this sucks, what have you done? And then they had the nerve to wreck on history and say, oh yeah, we did that intentionally. It should be viewed as a black comedy. So the joke's on you if you didn't get it, which is some grade A gaslighting. Fantastic. Absolutely. Stuff.
Good marketing team.
On that merit alone, for the marketing of blaming everyone but yourself, Neil LaBute, I think it deserves to be in the Criterion collection. It deserves to be studied. None of it makes sense. But this is one of those things, and I sort of talk about this, even with films that are a bit duller and not as great, there's a thing with Nicolas Cage movies is that, you know, you don't remember half of what happened here because it's kind of not interesting. It's very boring. But my God, do you remember a Nicolas Cage performance? And this, for better or worse, is one of his most memorable, because you almost know that, because he's a producer on this as well. So he's like, oh, I think I'm going to do it this way. And I think Neil LaBute, the only way his direction in this, and he's sort of very boring editing, makes sense for me, is that anytime he should have been doing his job, he was rolling around in a circle trying to suck his own hog. That's the only way this makes sense for me. They called him Rolling Neil LaBute on the set.
Rolling Neil.
Old Rolling Neil, because he was Sonic the Hedgehogging his way around the set.
Just spraying his rings all over the wall.
Just spraying rings everywhere. I don't know what he sounds like, but in my head he's like, I swear I was close this time. It's like, Neil, we're days behind schedule. We're going over budget here.
Is this a Trapped in Paradise situation where Nick Cage just takes over the production?
I have to assume so. Honestly, I haven't seen the original Wicker Man, so for all intents and purposes, as far as I'm concerned, this is the superior Wicker Man.
This is the only Wicker Man that we've seen, so.
On principle, I'm not going to watch the original. Yeah, were there bees in the original? Don't care. Don't know.
Don't know where to find out. Yeah. Doesn't exist.
Well, they couldn't have had bees. Bees are a new world crop.
There were no bees in 1973.
That's right. Yeah.
It was just that store-bought honey. How did it get there? We don't know. We don't know. Whole thing's a damn conspiracy theory.
But I got thoughts on Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
Just being pantsless all the time.
Major honey producer.
Mm. I think honey consumer.
A little bit of both.
Ooh.
Getting high honey on his own supply.
Honey and honey out. I don't know why that grosses me out so much, but it really does.
I think I like to imagine Winnie the Pooh. Winnie the Pooh definitely came up the last time I was on this podcast.
It did, yes.
And I think Winnie the Pooh flew into the Twin Towers the last time I was on this podcast.
Yes.
There is a recurring theme here.
Yeah. Honey can't melt steel beams, I believe was the phrase.
Yes. Put it on a t-shirt. And you know what? I still believe that. I don't know how long it's been, but honey cannot melt steel beams.
We should get the Mythbusters on this.
Yeah, I can't remember, because we were talking about all the like movie bears, because we were talking about Paddington. But yeah. Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I guess if you replaced Nicolas Cage's character in this, exact same dialogue, maybe the exact same intonation, but with Winnie the Pooh, so Edward Malus, it's Winnie the Malus, Winnie the Highway the Cop. Malus. And then he's just saying stuff like, bitches, you bitches, killing me won't bring back your goddamn money. And then he's getting his like little little Winnie the Pooh niece smashed him with a hammer.
By somebody in a Tigger costume. This is very nice. I like this new edit. Get on it, Peter.
Yeah, no, I'm glad about this. Do you guys have any last thoughts on this one?
I still thoroughly enjoy this film. For how bad it is, I have fun with it every single time.
It's terrifically entertaining if you've got time to get through the boring parts.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where it does have that. You mentioned The Wicker Man. It was like, oh, that's the worst movie. I'm like, it's fucking not.
Yeah, sadly, there's a lot worse.
I mean, gladly, there's a lot worse. Someone recently told me, it's like, oh, that's like the worst movie ever. I'm like, it's not. It's like, well, it's the worst Nick Cage movie ever. I'm like, definitely it's not. We have a bracket that proves it.
Yeah, we did the work.
Yeah. You haven't watched 64 Nicolas Cage movies. You don't get to talk.
You wouldn't last 5 minutes in my world.
Is this why Winnie the Pooh keeps coming up with you? Because you can do the impression.
You do have a very good Winnie the Pooh voice.
It shouldn't be as sinister as it is, but you know, there's Winnie the Pooh horror films out now, so it feels right.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Oh yeah, we can use as much of this as we want. That's public true. Domain.
Absolutely.
Yeah, come at me, Winnie Christopher Robin. Exactly,
he's public domain. He did a 9/11. He was on stormed the beaches of Normandy.
But on the wrong side.
Yeah, he stormed them from the land side.
Yeah. Yeah. No, English is nished. And some fucking French or something. Amongst various other war crimes. I don't want to say them because I don't know how much of it's going to make the cut.
Everything.
When the FBI is listening, I need you to know this is all satire and
yes, jokes. We'll put that at the top.
Anytime that Daryl comes on this podcast, there will be a mention of atrocities. There will be a mention of 9/11. Winnie the Pooh will come up. I'm surprised we've not mentioned cum yet. I feel like we've not hit all the Infinity Stones.
Well, we did have spraying rings, which I think was
it was implied.
Yeah. We had honey in, honey out.
I like how you like specified atrocities, like you separated atrocities and 9/11.
It's its own thing at this point.
Talking fact and fiction.
Look, if we're talking about, are we talking about thick 9/11 or flat 9/11?
Yeah.
There's two 9/11s.
Full thickness 9/11.
Always fun to be here. Always fun. Always
thank
fun.
You very much.
Yeah, Daryl, do you want to plug your shows or anything else?
So when I'm not inventing completely fictitious atrocities, you can find me in one of two places. I am over on Cage Rage, a Nicolas Cage podcast, in which I'm on the journey to true Cage Nirvana, just like the gentleman you're listening to here, going through all of the Nicolas Cage films, and only when I've seen all of them can I be at the tippy top of Nicolas Cage Mountaindom, and that is the purest place you can be on all the streaming services and the interwebs. Go find it. I'm not hard to find. Also, you can find me and previous guest of this podcast also, Mr. Petros Patsilivas, over on Getting Defoe, a dedicated Defoe podcast where we are covering all the highs, all the lows, and all things Willem Dafoe, currently in the midst of recording season 4. It is an absolutely delightful time, and you can find us in all the usual places at Dafoe U Pod. There is mandatory Dafoe hog chat in every episode as well. So
naturally.
Ticking all the boxes.
I mean, what was his hog was described as too disturbing to be on screen or something.
Yeah, for Antichrist, it's just too big, so... he is not a believer in flat theories.
No.
Unfortunately, he is living proof that we live in a thick world.
Keep it thick, baby.
Mm-hmm. Was a beautiful wingback snakeskin cuck chair. It was the best cuck chair I've ever seen.
That's nice.
It was a really high.
What was the hotel?
It was Hotel Chicago. It was a real scumbag fucking hotel. It was a terrible hotel, but.
Unless you want to watch your wife get fucked.
Yes.
Yeah. Good cuck chair.
Yeah. Unless you got a great bull with you. And then. Yeah. It's so funny, like that's mainstream knowledge.
Like knowledge,
now,
exactly. Right? Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. Yeah. I like to see
like,
my wife
it
just
used to
get
be like
plowed.
A really underground thing. And everybody's like, it's the chair you sit in while your wife gets fucked by a stranger.
Until the last, like,
steeple your fingers and lean in.
5 years or so, I always assumed that was like the True Lies chair, but now it's the cucking chair.
Cucking chair. He was kind of cucking himself. It was kind of. In a meta way.
Yeah,
True Lies is a great movie.
It is a terrific movie.
He is terrible. Like, there's not a good person in that movie. I watched it recently, and I was like, he's number one, manipulating his wife the entire time. Kidnaps her, basically tortures her to a certain degree.
Who's that? Is it Dan Aykroyd that's with him in that?
No, or, it's Tom Arnold.
Yeah. Tom Arnold. That's
Tom
right.
Arnold is right on. The best part, it's that whole movie is it's what Paxton is the whole reason to watch that movie. He's doing his spazzy ass like a 10-year-old boy. Like, how did that line make it?
Who knows?
Just screaming. He's great.
Yeah. Wow. It's been a long time. I used to love just throwing on just shit ass Schwarzenegger movies. Heat.
So
or Red Heat.
Yeah, Red Heat. It's a different movie.
Yeah, that's a better one.
Yeah, it'd be definitely a better movie.
Yeah, that genre is just dead. I guess Fast and Furious is the spiritual successor to like the big 80s and 90s action movies, but like they're just not the same. There's a point in True Lies where like two dogs jump at him and like he bonks their heads together and like
amazing. I gotta rewatch that movie.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. I'm thinking, I don't know how to start. So let's go.
No, you're doing it. Yeah, you did it just right.
Podcast. This is it.
And our friend,
Tank, Nick.
Yeah.
No, we finally outnumber.
Yeah.
Like, we're the dominant species now.
Oh, gross.
Well, white people.
The dominant nomenclature. Finally, the Nick vote counts for two.
No, it doesn't.
This is me putting what has been an otherwise lucrative career at risk by talking about a difficult movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Podcast. Well, we have a big listenership, so...
Hey, at least you don't have to talk about 8mm.
I don't know. I feel like that one's probably an easier approach. That one has, like, a sort of at least a moral, like, standpoint. Mm. Whereas this one just does not seem to know what good and bad is, which is a very, like, Lynchian kind of thing anyway, but...
By the end of the movie of 8mm, do you think, like, what is good and what is bad is the same as it was in the beginning? Because, like, now he's just, like... Vengeance killing.
Sure. But I mean, like, at least it's on the side of like this thing that I am killing for or against is like well established and it's wrong. But like by the end of Wild at Heart, like who has really turned into a better person or even like I don't think it's a point. There's no arc, right?
Oh, like obviously
Lula's better.
Sailor's better.
Sailor's
he calls those guys faggots and then he's like, I'm sorry for calling you homosexuals.
That's a magic lesson.
Yeah. He grew the good witch so fast.
That's right. Like Lynch does tie up the entire moral arc in like 2 minutes. He's like, oh yeah, we forgot to like put a bow on this. Let's have this unprompted thing we've been flirting with, a reference to Wizard of Oz. Like, let's just go way out over the top, bring it down. The thing that occurred to me coming in was like, in a way, it's strange because Nicolas Cage is probably the most reserved in the entire movie, which is a very odd thing to say, especially given like the fact that it ends with him singing Elvis on the hood of a car, and he's the most reserved performance through the entire thing. I think is a testament to this movie.
Yeah, I fucking love every performance around Nicolas Cage. And yeah, in that sense, he is definitely kind of the straight man in the show, even though there's so much about the character that is incredibly large, like his dancing techniques, his
sick backflips out of cars.
Hell yeah. Backflips so out of cars. Good, yeah. Fucking sexing.
He seems so good. At that.
Yeah. He seems like a real lover.
Yeah. No need for the cuck chair.
or
push it right up against the table. Everybody's in.
Yeah, come on, Bobby Peru.
Those teeth. No,
I was talking to my wife about this last night, and she's never seen. I was like, I don't recommend. Like, let's not go there. But I was kind of walking her through it, and I was like, all right, this is Nicolas Cage, Laura Dern, Laura Dern's mother, right? Diane Ladd plays her mother, who, like, I think she got Best Supporting Actress for that, or nominated.
Nominated.
Which is crazy to think that was a nominated role because it's just. Anyway. That
and yeah, we could go on that tangent.
Then you have Crispin Glover as a schizophrenic Santa Claus
for like a minute,
just pushing a black glove around on the ground and screaming and making sandwiches.
Cockroaches on his butthole.
That weird little like dance he does in front of the fence.
Yeah, then you have Harry Dean Stanton, and then you have Willem Dafoe. Like is that the best indie alt casting of all time?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. It's an absolute banger of people.
Yeah.
And then you have the usual like hodgepodge of random David Lynch sort of bizarro characters too. Character actors.
Yeah.
But nobody puts together a cast list quite like David Lynch and Wes Anderson.
And they come in at completely different tones. Yeah. Also, there's similar players in each one. Like Dafoe. Dafoe is the common thread between Wes Anderson and David Lynch. There's a world in which Willem Dafoe, David Lynch, and Wes Anderson have coffee at some point in their life, which I think would be a really fun conversation.
Well, David Lynch can't leave his house anymore, so if it hasn't happened, it won't happen now.
Yeah. Why doesn't he leave his house?
He's from smoking his whole life. He has severe emphysema and pretty much a cold will kill him.
It's nothing to have sympathy over. Like, the guy is very enthusiastically pro-smoking.
Yeah. Yeah, I told the story about...
You did do it to yourself.
But he's also like 80-something.
There's no way, or there's no reason he should be that fucking hot, though. Like,
God damn.
Like, that's a good-looking man.
It is a good-looking dude.
Yeah.
How do you smoke all the time and are old and sick and look that good?
So he started smoking.
He does have
cigarettes
that.
Made you cool, yeah. Right? Like, he's from that generation. So it just carries forward that he would continue to look cool.
He's the inspiration for that saying.
Yeah, right. But, you know, and then in the 80s and 90s, it no longer made you cool. It just, you know, killed your baby or whatever. Right. So and then yeah, no longer cool.
But what if you smoke two at the same time?
Oh, yeah. Very difficult and it hurts.
Yeah.
Good it is, know. In fact, too much cigarette at once.
I did try the cartoon thing where you have like five cigarettes in your mouth and you just smoke them. And it's how you die. It's a mistake. Yes, it is a mistake. Cartoons, again, have not provided me with proper guidance on how to live my life.
You're telling me I can't slice a single bean into wafer thin layers and then serve it up?
Just back to the cigarettes. When Sailor finds out that Lula's pregnant and he lights up too. And like every time he does it, I'm like, oh, and he's going to hand one to the pregnant lady. And it's like, no, he's going to smoke them both himself. And I'm still not sure which one was the bigger mistake.
Well, she's chain smoking the whole rest of that movie. And I'm just thinking that kid's going to come out weird.
Yeah, he's going to come out small and probably have a podcast.
Well, when you meet the kid, he's essentially like from Newsies.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, man. And he does that stupid like.
He's wearing fucking braces.
Yeah. Like,
so this is the third film in which Nick Cage gets out of prison, meets his child, and brings them a stuffed animal.
Yes. Yeah. The parallels between this and Con Air is.
And Stolen is the other one. Except he knew his daughter.
Stolen was the other one.
But he brings her
that big
bear.
Fucking. I thought it was a bunny, but yeah. No, you're right. It was a bear. Yeah, it was a bear. Yeah,
we were trying to figure out how many movies Nick Cage has been to prison in.
So a lion, a bear, and a bunny.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Whatever like dialect coach taught him that Southern accent deserves a bonus because he uses that thing from like 1985 to like 2005.
Oh, yeah.
He's like,
when he discovers Boston.
Yeah, right. Exactly. He transitions into the next phase.
Wait, is the Boston the problem? That's his dark times.
It could have been. Maybe they only paid for a Boston accent.
Mm.
I like to think that H.I. and Sailor are like brothers.
Yeah.
It seems like a shared universe to a certain degree. Just like one's a darker side than the other. Mm-hmm. And they both have the same vibe, the same kind of energy.
They're both like live action cartoons. One came on after 9 and the other one was on
right.
prime time.
So, Tank, you had seen this movie in the past, right?
Like a long time ago, back when I was like into endurance cinema and stuff, you know. I think that like a lot of Lynch is kind of ruined by the fan base. And what I mean by that is that people tend to over-rotate on him being a genius versus like, he's quirky, he's fun, he does a lot of great stuff. But like, I don't think he designs his movies to be like deeply thought about and talked about and written about. I think he's very much an experiential person, which like show up, experience it. If it changes you, great. But like the amount of people who just like fan over Lynch, I that's what I grew up with. And it kind of ruined him for me for a long time until like I got a little distance. And now I can go back and watch and really enjoy kind of like his career. The movie that always stood out to me from Lynch was Eraserhead. Like in all of Lynch's movies, with the exception of like Dune and The Elephant Man, which is kind of where he tried to go super mainstream and it didn't happen, are like adolescent male fantasies, right? So Eraserhead is about what is it like when like you finally have responsibilities and you have to deal with the fact that like you're this giant like sack of hormones that is getting itself into trouble over and over again. And then you get into Wild at Heart, and like Wild at Heart is fundamentally just a fantasy from like it's like a person who buys swords in the mall kind of fantasy. Like I want to have a snakeskin jacket and I'm going to kill this guy because my girlfriend mom tried to have me killed. And like there's a scene where it really pops where he's telling the story to Lula about I guess the first time he had sex or a person he had sex with, right? It was the dark haired lady. And at one point he said she was like on the bed bent over and there were there were semi-automatic guns and stroke mags or something like that. And I was like, this is exactly like a 16-year-old imagining being a cool. Like,
oh, this is what fucking
is. He's constantly defending her honor. They go to like a heavy metal show and he breaks out and sings Elvis after like beating up a guy who, like, I mean, it's just it is just an adolescent male fantasy. And that's all like Lynch movies are until about Lost Highway. And then it begins to like transition into like later years. But overall, I mean, it's more fun. I can go back. I can't really watch too much of it in a row. It's very melodramatic, but otherwise, like, I think you give yourself distance from the group that thinks he's the greatest thing to ever create film, and he becomes a really enjoyable watch. He does a lot of interesting stuff. I think he also informs a lot of cinema that comes after, and so for that I really enjoy it. I like this watch, and as I mentioned, I watched this in the from the Toronto airport into the airplane. I sat next to a lady and I apologized in advance. I'm like, look, I'm gonna be watching something. I forgot. You know, I hadn't seen how much.
You forgot about Texas Style.
I forgot about it. Luckily, hey, you have headphones. It would have been much worse. But like, I told her, like, hey, look, if you look over and you don't like what you see on my tablet, I will be happy to turn it off. She's like, I get it. It's fine. I'm like, okay, just letting you know.
Did you tell her you were doing it for a podcast?
Yes, I did. But I don't think that helps.
No, that's probably true. That's like an extra red mark.
Yeah. I don't know. So I'll say he's funnier than people give him credit for. He's goofier. Like, it's not as serious as it kind of gets made out to be. But the fact this movie won the Palme d'Or, the fact this movie was nominated for Academy Awards, this is considered his like biggest commercial success up to that point. I think Elephant Man was probably the biggest one, but it's crazy to me that this was a movie in 1990 that ran in theaters and like had big name stars and like propped into like the consciousness the way it did, because it is super, super sexual, is incredibly violent. And those two things merge constantly through the whole movie. And like, you just don't see that. That is not stuff you see anymore.
Right. Putting sex up against violence so much.
Yeah. I guess like Euphoria kind of did it.
Sure.
But not like this. This whole movie, like, and I think all this period of Lynch, almost all Lynch movies feel like you walked into a room you weren't supposed to be in. And you're seeing, like, you know what I mean? Like you're, again, like, you're a young person and you get it. Like, I'm going to be a dangerous, sexy person. And then you walk into a room full of dangerous, sexy people. And you're like, this is a lot worse than I thought it was going to be.
I was not prepared for the consequences of this. Right. Yeah.
I do not believe that I am ready for this.
I do have one question in regards to your assessment of the film about it being a 16-year-old mall sword owning a
testosterone. Did this hurt your feelings?
No, I'm curious. What kind of sword did adolescent Tank own? Because we've had this conversation. We all had swords. So
I had a pocket knife. That was, you know, it wasn't a switchblade. It was just kind of a pocket knife. I carry that around. I feel kind of cool. I never had a sword, but I was definitely sword adjacent. Many of my friends had swords.
Bo-staff?
A buddy of mine had like a big claymore, right?
Like
he was into that kind of world.
Nice.
Yeah. So
you feel like a katana guy to me for some reason. Yeah, I don't know why.
I don't know why I come off like that.
Yeah, I got that vibe, but maybe you're not.
If I had to, I would want it to be like probably in the, not a sword, like the mace territory. That seems fun. Like a very medieval weapon. Yeah. I think would be good. The Japanese style, God bless it. Good for them. But like, it's just not me. I'm more of a cudgel, you know? Yeah.
I want to meet a flail person.
Yeah.
Like somebody who legitimately just has a stick with chain and a spiked ball on the end of it in their closet. Like just sitting on the floor. Because how do you support a flail and make it look cool?
On the floor, it has a hang, right? You can get that chain in there.
Yeah, right.
This movie has nunchuck energy, though.
It
does
have nunchuck energy. Yeah. I mean, all the like,
yeah.
You know,
I was listening to Power Mad on my way over here today, and it was very difficult not to just like stomp on the gas and like punch out my windows. Stab it and steer.
Stab it and steer. I fucking love that line.
Yeah, the language in this movie still excites me. Like just the way they talk about things. It's like, I don't hear anybody ever say things
that's
like
the
that.
Thing. Because like the whole thing, you're right, Tank. It's like very melodramatic. It feels soap opera-y. It feels like this could be a TV show, you know, not shocking with David Lynch. But like there's something about the language that really does drive the entire thing and keep it moving in a fun, interesting way.
I think it's the fantasy thing. It is a fantasy. Yeah. And some of it's, by the way, some of it's really, really sexy. That's the thing about the show. Like Laura Dern is on fire.
Oh yeah.
Like if you only know Jurassic Park on Laura Dern, you would never have known that she had this whole
four-time buttoned up mom and in that. And this is the total opposite.
Yeah. Like she's just manic, but she owns every scene she's in. Like the chemistry between her and Cage is
it's insane.
Outstanding. Yeah. Like I've just not seen two like performers have like that kind of sexual chemistry. And I think that's what it is. It's like, it does fall into a very fun place. It rockets, it moves forward. It's kind of pulpy. It's kind of noir-y. Like Lynch likes that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And they hit really like the line that always got, other than the jacket, right? The snake classic jacket. Yeah. When he says, "Honey, you're giving me a boner with a capital O." Like the capital O is like, that's the detail on
boner.
That.
Yeah.
It's a boner.
Yeah.
I mean, it does make sense with that accent.
And it's just so boner. Much fun to say.
It's interesting too, because everybody in that movie, no matter how, like Willem Dafoe is maybe one of the most horrible people to ever walk on screen.
Oh yeah.
Oof. He's rough.
He is
the teeth alone.
But he is
peeing with the door open.
Yeah. Just coming straight in. Yeah. Like he's a deplorable human being, but like he's really having fun with the character. Like he's really like in it, and he hits that line between like real and melodramatic or like caricature. And that's kind of where everybody sits in the whole movie.
I feel like we got to talk about the Mr. Reindeer of it all.
You fixate on this character so much.
It's a really weird character.
It's a weird movie.
Like, it's like the wolf. He's a fixer. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. But he doesn't actually do anything. He just like shits while some lady dances topless for him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you gotta have
like a nice dinner party.
I feel like you need that guy in between you and your contract killer. Mm-hmm. So that you have.
It's just interesting to actually see him. Usually you see the contract killer, the more interesting angle. Instead, you just see this fucking strange dude.
It sounds to me like Mr. Reindeer is the more interesting angle in your brain.
Maybe. Well, that's actually maybe the point, is I kind of want more with Mr. Reindeer, and I want more resolution around it.
Like a Mr. Reindeer spinoff series?
Kind of. Well, so like,
what happens, more would ruin it.
What happens if the hit doesn't work? Like, is Sailor just free to go now? Like, the fucking silver dollar got paid.
I mean, he kind of was free to go.
Yeah,
certainly that's how it played out. But like, why? Because Bobby Peru blew his own head off. Isabella Rossellini went to jail.
I don't want to cop out, but like, I think it's unimportant, right? He is a deeper layer in this disgusting world.
Yeah,
right?
Fair enough.
And so like at the very top, you probably have Lula, right? So Lula is probably of anybody the most sort of, I don't want to say good, but
she's
like,
got the cleanest conscience.
Yeah, it's the cleanest conscience, right? Most earnest. And then right below is Sailor, weirdly enough, right? Sailor's done some bad things, but he recognizes. Okay. Then you have like probably Diane Ladd's character. Pretty.
No, I mean, Harry Dean Stanton.
Yeah, you probably got Johnny first.
Johnny first. And then it starts to go down. And it's just like the layers of like. And then when you get to Reindeer, it's just animalistic. Like the hit people that Reindeer pulls in are like
lunatics.
Yeah. Lunatics, right. Maniacs, right? So he's like the layer between. So it's like Santos. Yeah.
Yeah.
Santos is right there above Reindeer, but Reindeer is the translation layer down into like the real primal, evil, dark.
The character I'm obsessed with is the one who has the least to say in this movie. And it's the one who kind of looks like Bono, one of the contract killers. Every time I see him, I'm like, that looks like Bono.
Yeah.
Looks like a young Bono.
I kind of wish it had been.
I did too. I did IMDb it. It's not.
Like an uncredited Bono. Yeah. He seems like, but not if it was like 1984, maybe.
It was Bono with a capital O, though.
Yeah.
Bono. Bono.
Bono. I think like the mechanics of like how that world works is less about like, because like I was thinking about it because I'd watched John Wick recently and they do the whole coin thing.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I was listening to another podcast and they were talking about, what's the currency exchange rate for the coin? Because it seems like it's like killing a person is a coin, and then also tipping your doorman is a coin. So like, what's the coin? And I was like, same thing with this. It's like, it's just the mechanics don't matter. It's just kind of a cool flourish. And it's a way of like just showing a transaction is happening. There's rules in this world. But also, again, you walked into a room you're not supposed to be in and you're not going to understand the rules.
Yeah, it's just like a timeless way of showing something's happening, like Austin Powers.
Yeah.
Dr. Evil wants $1 million. Yeah. Like that means one thing at the beginning of the movie versus at the end of the movie. He's like $1 million and gets laughed out of the room.
Yeah, fair enough.
So the coin is a coin.
Yeah.
But two silver dollars for two lives seems, I don't know how that would, inflation would affect that, but it seems like not too bad.
They do seem to be living very expensive lives. And I doubt that, you know, the people who run the giant mansion with all the women take a coin you know, they have rent to pay. The electric company's not going to take a coin.
I think what I really want, though, is like The Secret Life of Mr. Reindeer. I want that like TV series, you know, where it's just like whatever the fuck that dude is up to.
It's never going
to
be as interesting as you think it is.
Of course not.
That's kind of One-Eyed Jax in in Twin Peaks, right? It's like this. It's not him. It's the world, right? Because he would be ultimate. He's uninterested. He'd just be taking craps and watching women dance topless, right?
Right. So that show wouldn't be all that good.
Great.
But or it would be great.
But like the old lady, I guess it's a brothel. The old lady that runs the high-end brothel, she would be a really fun character because she has like one line and she just nails it. Just, you're here to make him happy or whatever. So it's like, what is that world like? I think is what he kept continuing to explore. And he kind of touches on it in Blue Velvet. Again, there's this Frank, this really dark world that has its own logic. There's its own people. And you get to touch on it. And then in Twin Peaks, I think he goes a couple of layers into it. Like give you a little bit more of what would it like to be like, not just to walk into the room, but like live in that space for a period of time.
Yeah.
Unpleasant, by the way, is the answer. That's what it's like.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's a cautionary tale. David Lynch movies. Mothers, hug your children.
I thought that was going to take a Nick turn. I was hot on the button here. I was like, mute.
Nope.
It was just a genuine, nice thought. It's weird.
How do you not wind up in a real life David Lynch film? I was thinking about this. It's kind of the last like point I'll put on that kind of world. So I when I was 16, I loosely had a Lynchian experience in real life. So I was going to be a dangerous kid. I was like, I'm going to sell drugs. Mm-hmm. I get to know dangerous people and I'm going to be a dangerous person. So a friend of mine had a friend, it was a friend of a friend, and he was going into that world. He was like 17. So he's like, I'll go find you like an ounce of weed or whatever. Like that's as dangerous as I was going to get. I was going to sell marijuana to high school kids in Oklahoma. So
that's living on the edge.
Yeah, it is. We had this like long night of like trying to find an ounce of weed, and I just kept going into places with this guy, and every time I was like, I don't want to do this. So I went into one room with this like short, stubby guy who was red haired, and he had like a big enforcer looking dude behind him, and the short guy just said, "You shouldn't have brought him in here. Get him out of here." And then like he stayed and talked, and then we went to this guy's mother's house, and it was like, we walk in, it's 11 o'clock at night. There's a lady who has all the furniture in the middle of the room and she's painting and she's like tweaked out of her mind. And the mom is upstairs with like her boyfriend and like two children that are not theirs, like watching Mr. Giggles. I touched into this world. That's the whole time I'm watching this movie. I'm like, and even like Blue Velvet, like you want to be a dangerous person. This is what dangerous people are like. And like, I don't want to be a part of that. I don't want it at all.
Yeah. It's like, oh, this is actually pretty scary.
This is very gross. And I do not question. Like this.
It always makes me think of the scene in Community where Troy gets kidnapped by air conditioning repair.
Yeah.
It's like, why is there a spaceman making paninis in the corner? Cause we don't want anyone to believe you.
Yeah.
Isn't that right? Black Hitler. Have you seen the movie this is going up against, Wicker Man?
I've not seen the Nicolas Cage version of Wicker Man. So
you're the only person that's seen the other one.
I have. And all I can say is that agrarian life in England seems very, very complex and difficult. And if you have to kill a police officer in order to make the corn crop, you got to do what you got to do.
Listen, farming, small sacrifices.
Farming is hard.
Farming is hard.
People need to eat.
Yeah.
I mean, that's such an old culture. I'm sure that there are very few nutrients left in the soil. So what's a cop here and there?
Yeah, sure.
Just to make the corn grow.
Yeah.
Also, you're welcome, England, for corn. Corn and tomatoes. And you're bees. Welcome. Yeah, and bees. They didn't have bees in
Nobody
Europe.
Nobody had bees.
You're welcome, Daryl.
Bees are a new world crop.
No flowers, just tubers. Tubers and gourds. That's all we're eating.
Just a bunch of dick-shaped shit.
That's all you need.
This explains so much of the Catholic Church.
I mean, if you think about it, like, does anybody give a shit about Nicolas Cage Wicker Man? If you had to delete one movie from the existence of like the world, if it was Wild at Heart or Wicker Man, you keep Wild at Heart.
I do think to your point, one has a much more cultural effect on the cinematic landscape.
Like if the Library of Congress was like, hey, we're full, we can only let one of you in.
Yeah, but that for Wicker Man
or Wild at Heart. Yeah.
That's a tough one because the memes alone.
Yeah.
Good point.
Could we exist in a world that didn't have not the bees, not the bees?
Well, also the memes sort of do that Back to the Future fade out thing, and we just have to watch them go away.
No,
really sadly.
Oh, yeah. Aww. And you so remember them, but you can never presence. Point at it again.
Exactly.
All my memes are empty. So I think maybe Wild at Heart. I think it probably has a lot more memes than we think it does. Like it just it's so old and it was pre meme. Sure. So maybe my job leaving here, if I think about why I was brought in, is to start bringing Wild at Heart memes forward. So I think there's just enough. I think there's probably 50 I could cut out really, really easily.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And the guitar sound, certainly,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Brow, 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 brow. Choke, 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 choke. Incredible.
What a great soundtrack.
Absolutely.
Okay. When I'm always going to talk about it because I fucking love it. When they're at that first Power Mad show and they're like, you guys got some real good energy. Just like Big E. Yeah. He's like, Big E, let me know if you follow this one. And like one note into the song, they're like, oh yeah, we know this Elvis song.
Yeah, it's
just
wild.
The thing that I asked Peter and I watched this last night and I was just like, okay. And Peter's like, it's weird that this band knows it. And my thought was, it's weird that the people who paid money for this show are into it.
Well, they're screaming like it's Elvis show. Like right. It's like yeah. That. It's that girl scream like the Beatles got. And it's yeah. So that's the fantasy thing. Like yeah. That is a
totally
that is a 16-year-old sitting in a trailer, smoking cigarettes he stole from his mom, playing with his katana, fantasizing about singing Elvis and everybody being way into it.
Yeah, just breaking yeah, down the show.
Oh yeah. And like the show and just lying to his friends about it. Like that was the whole movie.
Yeah. Next thing you know, he's having sex on a bed with assault rifles and skin mags. Which, okay. Now I've never like specifically fantasized about that, but part of it sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing.
Like, it's like, well, I mean, like he's not wrong.
Yeah.
Like, sure. Okay. But like maybe two or three assault rifles and like they don't have to be loaded.
Sure.
Actually, probably best if they're not.
But I mean, you'd want to move them off to the side, wouldn't you?
No.
Honey, you going to check that clip before we do this?
No, I want to like have to rearrange shit mid-sex.
Your gun is digging into my hip.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing.
Right?
It's just fantasy. It's so much fun, too, because like that's what gives it its permission to be as dark as it is that at some point it's just that this is all in like the id. And it's just this like flow and it can't stop. You know, it's just like a fantasy that's building on itself. And then the good witch comes down for some reason.
Yeah.
Why not? Oh, she's such a bad actress, too. I hated her in Twin Peaks. I don't know why David Lynch likes her.
I think it's because she's a bad actress.
I think probably. David Lynch just wants oddities, too.
Yeah.
Like, he loves
an
oddity.
She's a normal person. She just looks like a normal girl.
Pretty odd now.
Well, fair enough.
There is probably just a Rolodex of people who are like, oh, yeah, I'm free on Thursday. I'll come on down.
I mean, yeah,
you
that was
need me to do this.
Okay. That was a we're not going to really fit you for this dress. You're just going to put it on. We're going to put you on some wires and you're going to say these lines.
Yeah.
You're going to read these from a cue card and you're going to go home.
Wild at heart. the inclusion of the Wizard of Oz stuff still kind of gets me because it's not in the actual stories.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's just sort of out there. Like what makes that the choice?
Well, it's just so heavy-handed too. It's not like it's like a subtle like homage to the Wizard of Oz. They just keep mentioning it and just pulling visuals from it.
It has nothing story wise to connect it. It's not like
other than to hand
like
wave away an ending.
Yeah. Seems fair.
I think the only tie-in to like the real thing or the rest of the movie is Bobby Peru mentioning Toto. I think it was Bobby.
No, it wasn't. It was the guy who played Eraserhead.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
When I said I had a dog, you pictured a dog.
So good. That's like a beautiful Lynch moment. Or like all the Texas people sitting out there having conversations. Like nobody's talking to each other. They're just like speaking past each other for everything.
The characters on the side of the movie, like everybody in the background, just really, really tickles me throughout. From the Texas sized porno being shot, the guy who just like squawks at the bar, Dell.
It definitely feels like a lived in world and where there's just more going on than the immediate scene.
It's fun because like Roger Ebert hates David Lynch movie, although he came around near the end, I think, but he like hated this movie, like but he calls out a scene, and I when I watched it this time around, I really paid attention. It's where they blow the guy's hand off near the end of the robbery.
Oh yeah.
And they're like just comic amounts of blood, and they're kind of like sloshing around in it. And the other guy's going, they can sew him back on now. They can do that. It's going to be okay. And the dog has it in his mouth and like runs off, which apparently is like a reference to like a Japanese film or something like that. But like, it's just,
of course,
it's,
yes,
but it's just like, that is the type of thing that I'm looking for out of his movies, which is like cutting the tension, cutting it. Cause I mean, right after Willem Dafoe like blows his head off and yeah. like an incredible, so that almost got this movie an X rating.
Oh
yeah. So it was right.
It is
on
pretty
the
graphic.
Yeah. It is pretty graphic
and gross.
That was the last moment, but the MPAA, they added smoke post-production. So you didn't see it come off. Apparently the original is much more violent.
You just saw it pop yeah, right off.
Pop right off. And they were like, X rating. You did it, buddy. And they're like, all right, we'll put smoke there. And apparently that was like the needle. Like,
eh, right. I do love the stocking trailing behind the heads. Yeah. It's the ball.
Yeah. I would love to like take a movie and push it right over the edge and then just get the censor's notes and be like, all right, what can we do that has the least impact on the wildness of the film to get it just into like mass marketing?
I mean, I think you need to see the new Toxic Avenger film.
Dude, so
apparently that's unreleasable.
The guys who created the first American Pie, the director of that, he was talking on the Blank Check podcast and he was talking about how they had to get down to like remove one thrust from a pie fucking and they're like, that'll do it, that'll put you back to an R.
So awesome.
But this is the South Park story too, like the original South Park movie. I don't remember what the title was, but this
bigger longer uncut.
Well, that was the one, that was the compromise. They had another one they submitted and like, absolutely not, that's too sexual. And they came back with this one and they were like, well, bigger longer and uncut significantly. So they were like, this is much worse, they're gonna give us the first one. And they were like, perfect. Nailed it. That's exactly it. It's like, this is so arbitrary. Like,
yeah.
Well, they had trouble with the fractured but whole also.
Yeah, true.
It's a great game.
Yeah.
You can soft lock that game real easy.
Yeah, yeah. What does that mean?
Where like you can't beat the game.
Oh, you don't get soft lock?
I gotta stop agreeing with stuff so quickly. Like, wait, what?
There's a, when you get like your second power, if you go the stealth route or like the ninja route. When you're supposed to use your like super move to like finish the tutorial, it doesn't give you enough power to do it and you cannot complete the tutorial. It just breaks the game where you can't get out of the tutorial section. And if you've saved right before there, your entire game's gone.
So take note, listeners.
Yeah. Don't get soft locked.
Don't get soft locked and
only get hard locked.
Hard lock all the time.
This movie still really, really tickles me all the way through just because every scene seems very full. Like there's an amount of content that you just consistently get throughout it. And so much of it is just also jarring. The transitions from scene to scene are something catching fire or somebody screaming or like everything is just like, and we're somewhere else and we're somewhere else. And with my aggressive ADD, it's incredible because it keeps me focused down. So it's like, oh, I can't look away. Can't get like lost in a thought, but the characters are weird. And they keep my attention. It turns me around and I like it.
Peter and I were talking about it before, like we started watching last night about it. It's like, neither one of us is super into David Lynch. And I've enjoyed this movie every time I watched it. And I'm glad we watched it in the theater the first time we watched it. But kind of going back and watching it for my fourth time now, but I forget so much of this film. Like I remember the broad strokes. I remember the like through line, but I forget all the little vignettes and all the little characters. And I'm always surprised and happy to see those again. Crispin Glover, who I always remember is in this movie, but I always forget how weird that scene is. And it does have the energy of a car crash. It actually has the energy of the car crashes in the Blues Brothers because it just keeps coming and it doesn't stop. And when you think it's finally done, the one cop car falls from the sky and I'm here for it. So why do you think this movie should go through?
Where it sits as like a film itself is like it's like a hugely significant movie. You know, it kind of ushers in. It's part of that group that ushers in like the next wave of like 90s movies. You know, so we're getting out of the Spielberg 80s big movie kind of like popcorn movie blockbuster, and we're like, all right, we're kind of getting sick of that. There's a bunch of corporate films, and then like at the end of the 80s and 90s, you get like Wild at Heart, True Romance, you get Natural Born Killers, then Reservoir Dogs shows up, Pulp Fiction, then we're off. Then we're like firmly in the violent, grungy 90s era. You know, we're making Fight Club, we're doing all that kind of fun stuff. So as a transition, like this is like Nicolas Cage as a part of an ensemble cast, like ushering in an entire like new genre of filmmaking. It's also maybe on like a cultural level, like again, because how it showed up at like festivals and ultimately how it like made its way into the consciousness. It's one of the most like impactful things I think he's ever been a part of. I don't think it's the best Nicolas Cage performance, but I think him being able to be like layered into such an erratic and insane movie and be the straight man essentially, or like the heart of it to a certain degree, like is fantastic, because he's usually the wild card, or you know, he has all of it on his shoulders, and then this one he's just part of this like massive bouncing chaotic machine, and he anchors it really, really well. It's funny, it's very physical, it's maybe physicality wise it's one of his best. Mm-hmm. I think he's in that late, like when he gets like, I think it's The Rock, or is when he goes super action movie, it's not as much fun. Like when he's wiry and spastic, so you know, he's doing karate kicks while listening to the heavy metal music and all that kind of fun stuff. Mm-hmm. So I just to summarize, it's a major transitional moment for filmmaking in general, to be pretentious about it, but it's also a thing where he could have gone really, really far, but pulled it back to let everybody else go really far. So it showed that, you know, he has kind of layers and different modality. Like, go watch weird movies again, you know, like there's so many, like we got the polished like big film blockbuster. Like, it was crazy to me that you, I forgot to say that you watched this in a theater with the other human beings. I cannot imagine, you know, when this came out, like, because I worked in a movie theater for a while and people would just go to movies, especially in 1990 when you couldn't really find out what a movie was about. You know what I mean?
But you just
like,
would go.
You would just go and be like, oh, this, I like Nicolas Cage and Diane Ladd. She was my favorite actress when I was a girl. And they would just go in and like, I cannot imagine what it was like to just get hit in the face with this movie, you know? And like, so if anything, it's like plugging the eye. It's really fun. It's kind of inspired me to like go back and like start rewatching, especially the Lynch stuff and a lot of like the more complicated directors from the 80s and 90s, especially. So that would be my plug, is like get back into that stuff, because it's super, super weird. But it's also, you can see how it informs the big stuff that we all like. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of things that happen here. And this is a genre they don't make anymore. They don't make like Bonnie and Clyde, like violent kids on like fucking on the edge of the world movies anymore. They seem to make them every 2 years from like 88 to like 98. And so like, yeah, have fun. Go back. There's a bunch. Watch True Romance. Watch Natural Born Killers. These are not great movies all the time, but there's some excellent, there's a great moments in almost all of them. And so.
Yeah, shit. Well, thanks, Tank. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
It was fun. Sure.
If you want to get weird, this is a good movie to get weird on.
I do thoroughly enjoy the weird category of this bracket.
Yeah, me too.
All right, so that was some pretty good conversations there. I think there's a lot to be said, a lot of merit in both arguments. It seems to come down to me for a movie that has like a really bold performance by Nicolas Cage and a very lackluster world surrounding it, to a very bold world with not a lackluster, but a more reserved and directed Nicolas Cage.
I mean, this goes to, I think, what we keep going back and forth on. What's the metric?
There is no metric, though, unfortunately. We've screwed ourselves on that one every time.
Is it about like how cagey Nick Cage is, or is it about like the film itself?
Yeah. Some of that also is like, which movie would you rather show somebody? And they're both great.
Comfortably, I could show more people Wicker Man.
That's actually a fair point. Like, it is a more boring movie, but I would feel safer showing Wicker Man to people.
It's a more boring movie, but it's also a hilarious movie if you go into it with the right expectation.
Yeah, for that like 20%.
Yeah, like I'm never going to show someone The Wicker Man and be like, "You're going to love this movie. It's going to be outstanding." You're like, and I'm like, "This is going to be weird. You're going to go for a ride, and you're going to question things." And I'm going to just watch it.
Yeah, Cage Dancer John watched both of these movies with me this time, and last night after watching Wild at Heart, said, "Well, those were both pretty boring."
Oh, ouch! Every movie has its own kind of audience that I would advise watching it. I would probably recommend Wicker Man more to the people I'm unsure of like how cool they are.
Yeah, they don't have a snakeskin jacket.
But if I wanted somebody to see something that was just gonna blow their minds, I would be more inclined to recommend Wild at Heart.
Yeah.
And if you don't want your mind blown, I don't know why I'd be talking to you.
I mean, I would say Wild at Heart is definitely the better film, better directed, better written. Mm-hmm. And is the better performance by Nicolas Cage. It's much more consistent and good.
Right. You just are outside of those, like, the jokes that are on the internet.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of like trade-off you're getting for that. Do I feel like either movie holds more weight in a you have to have seen this movie to appreciate Nicolas Cage? No. I don't think the couple of jokes we make about Wicker Man need anybody to like watch it.
That's a movie that exists outside of itself, like in the zeitgeist of his own. Because we've had the conversation with people like, that's the worst movie ever. I'm like, have you ever seen it? Well, no. Then you don't know.
Yeah. Because
it's far from the worst movie ever. It's far from his worst movie.
It's far from the worst. It's far from his mid-ist either.
Yeah.
True.
It's existing in that like sweet 43% approval rating.
Well, and I think
Boyega has like a 15%, but
that's from people who haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's a 43 for us.
I think what Daryl kind of pointed out is just like that was just kind of the stamp or the start of like that very mid era of Cage. And I think this movie gets unfairly lumped into that because I expected so much worse from this film the first time I saw it. And I've enjoyed it every time I've watched it. What I'm saying is it's not a bad film and it doesn't deserve to be shat on as much as it gets.
Well, yeah, it's not a bad film, but it's important to remember it's not a good film.
I didn't say it was.
I just need everybody on the outside to know that we understand it's a film.
They understand context.
It is a film.
Yeah, it's one of those films of all time.
I think that Wild at Heart will elicit a much more extreme response to it from any viewer, whether they like it or not. And they will either love it or hate it. There is no, I don't think there's a middle ground on that film.
That's true. Yeah. I don't think many people walk away from it being like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Like I kind of think about it now as we're getting closer to the end of this, you know, we're going to do a head to head viewing of these movies, a double feature somewhere locally and have people come watch these movies with us. And thinking about like, would Wild at Heart get audience reaction versus Wicker Man? I think it really does. You know, yeah. I think it's a more interesting one to stage a screening of.
Actually, to tie what you said about it being, well, what Daryl said about it being kind of like that pivoting point in Nicolas Cage's career where things went to the mid, and what Tank said about being a pivotal point in film where a lot of film was changing into this kind of like hyper graphic, like fantasy, testosterone driven stories. One of those outcomes is more interesting if we have to talk about like impact
on cinema in general.
Yeah. I think my bias is pretty clear. Yeah. So
yeah, Tank said, it's a much more kind of sedate and grounding role for Nicolas Cage. I think we forget over time. Most people have forgotten how good an actor he can be. I mean, Pig isn't a over the top performance. It is a very, grounded performance in a weird world. Not as weird as this, but it still kind of has that.
It has its own rules.
It has its own rules. So, I mean, by that metric, I think it's the better performance. And I think Wild at Heart deserves to be in the final rounds.
The Master Eight.
Yeah.
Obviously, I agree.
Sorry, Daryl.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, I appreciate Daryl's efforts, but
honey, we fought a war to not have to listen to that accent anymore.
Gotta love those conspiracy theories or truths.
Yeah. Those deep truths. Wild at Heart is just such a terrific film. It's a terrific ride to go on. And if you want to like see film that's not produced the way you watch film now, this is a good piece of cinema to go back and be like, people did some weird ass shit. Maybe if there's enough interest in it, we see some weird ass shit again.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love to see weird shit done by modern. I mean, like, look at Mandy. That's some weird shit.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's modern. And that's good. I would love to see more shit like Mandy.
Yep. Yeah. I feel like there's a real issue with the industry right now. We don't need to get into this too deeply, but it's just like, everything has to make $1 billion. It's got to be an Avatar. It's got to be a Marvel. You know, it's got to be all these things. And it's like there should still be a space for a buddy comedy. There should be a space for this kind of thing, you know, where it's like, that's weird. And I spent, you know, 90 minutes or whatever it is having a great fucking time. And I'm thinking about it.
Well, and I feel like Nick Cage is at a point in his career again where that's what he's doing. Because I'm just looking at the poster up there. Pig is weird. Mandy weird. Color Out of Space. Weird, not big box office films, but you know, someone out there is still making these movies and they're casting Nick Cage in them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's tied to it. You're right. And that's a really cool fucking thing. You know, you think about this guy who's been a mega star and he's hitching his horse to what we're talking about, which is like, let's make movies fucking fun and interesting again.
The unbearable weight of massive talent.
Long Legs, dream scenario. I mean, all these things. I was actually just
thinking about Long Legs. It's incredible how much of a lasting impact. Like, I still talk to people online who are like, yeah, I love it. Yeah. I keep going back to watching it and it's like, fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah, it's great.
It's weird. It's a weird choice. It's a weird performance. And we don't get a lot of film for that niche. So yeah, I'm glad Nicolas Cage is doing it.
It's cool to have someone with clout like he has backing that kind of stuff. It's like, here's hoping we get more of it. All right. Wild at Heart.
Wild at Heart.
Very enthusiastic. Wild at Heart.
Yeah, if you want to support us, thank you for listening. We are on social media at @cage_match_pod. We are on Patreon at @cagematchpod. If you do want to give us money, which is a wild thing to do, we will
put us in your heart.
Yeah, trust your heart. I'm going to make a t-shirt, I think. Well, I'm going to make a couple t-shirts. Some of them are going to be more appropriate or inappropriate than others. But special thanks to our Sparkle buddies, Josh, Sean, Josie, Rico, Matt, Adam, and Bill. And to our Cage Dancers, Ira, John, Freeman, Lance, and Nathan, and Cameron. Sorry, Cameron. I almost fucked it up. I don't have anything else.
Right. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Oh, there we go.
Who knows? It just needed to go for all about
the
an hour.
For all the listeners, the hum or the crackle that's been in our ears for the last 45 minutes just stopped. So
I kind of miss it.
Yeah. It's like when the hiccups go away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Shake the table till it starts.
Now I'm concerned that the humming's left our headphones and just entered the recording. Stop everything. Check the recording.